Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 105 of Her, the podcast, all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her what? Sex in the office? Oh my, this is going to be an interesting episode, to say the least. Before we launch into our episode, just know it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix, customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review this episode. We love it because I so welcome your thoughts and your feedback. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Now, I don't know about you, honey, but in 21st century living, things are getting real complex between men, women, and the whole sex partition that's dividing the workplace. Who better to talk to us and to enlighten us about this whole thing than Kim Elsesser? And she is a PhD lecturer at UCLA and the author of Sex and the Office, Women, Men, and the Sex Partition That's Dividing the Workplace. Oh my gosh, I read about this in the New York Times, and I was all over it because I was waiting for someone to finally talk about this. You know, Dr. Elsesser is not only the author of the book, but as a lecturer at UCLA, she also teaches classes on psychology and gender, and she's a smarty pants when it comes to this whole issue. Oh, good Lord, she's written, she's been out there on a multimedia platform, really trying to help us suss through this rather thorny issue. Dr. Elsesser, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thanks, and thanks for talking about this important issue.
Oh my gosh. So I remember like it was yesterday, right, that Vice President Mike Pence made a comment that he doesn't eat alone with any woman other than his wife. Well, after I picked myself up off the floor, I said to myself, wow, you know, in my whole life, with all the work I do and back and forth, I've lost count of the number of times I've had, you know, lunches and dinners and, you know, breakfasts with, you know, some male, because I have a very busy, rich, amazing life that involves men. What can I say? And then I thought, wow, this is getting a little more complex because suddenly there are inferences like, are people insinuating that something's going on there when it isn't? Or is it being fueled by the fact that a lot of people are kind of, well, hooking up at work? And oh my goodness gracious. And then women, in order to be able to get those promotions and make certain that their bosses or leadership are aware of what they're all about, really do need some one-on-one FaceTime. But then if they do that, is there an oh my goodness gracious. So I'm going in circles here. Dr. Elsesser, what are we to do?
Well, you're exactly right. Men are becoming afraid to mentor or even befriend women because they're afraid that if they're friendly toward women, they're afraid they'll be misinterpreted as sexual harassment or romantic interest. So they tend to stick with other men at work when it comes time for things like you said, like lunches or dinners or drinks or business trips. And it leaves women out, and it leaves women without the male mentors and the male friends at work that they need for their career.
Yeah. You know, you were quoted in the article as saying, organizations are so concerned with their legal liabilities, but nobody's really focused on how to reduce harassment, at the same time teach men and women to have working relationships with the opposite sex. Oh, boy, this is really getting complicated, right? So what else have you found in the research about really bringing this up to snuff in contemporary living today, some of the tough challenges out there and how organizations are beginning to address these.
Well, like you said, the first one is sexual harassment. There's very little evidence right now that the sexual harassment training sessions that we do actually reduce harassment. So the training sessions have been focused just on reducing the company's legal liability, and nobody's really studying how to really reduce harassment. So they need to start working on that to make the training more effective. But they also need to start teaching people not only what is harassment, but we have to teach them what is not harassment. For example, that it's not harassment for a male colleague to ask a female colleague to join him for lunch or dinner. That's not harassment. That's mentoring. And, you know, that's really important. And organizations need to teach employees how important that is. And that if people are not doing that and only inviting same-sex people to lunch and dinner, that is discrimination, and that is also illegal. But there are also other things that organizations can do. They can have mentor programs where they assign people mentors. And so if somebody is assigned to be your mentor, it creates less suspicion. People won't necessarily think you're up to shenanigans because you're meeting alone together if you've been assigned to work together on something. And lastly, there are things that some organizations have been doing just to make the networking easier for all employees. So, for example, Google has weekly social gatherings. They installed long tables in their cafeteria to encourage employees to get to know someone, you know, while they eat. And they even researched the optimal length of the lunch line. They wanted to know how long someone should wait in line to get their lunch so that they would most likely meet someone new. And they found it was 3 to 4 minutes. But that works for everyone, but it particularly works for women because, you know, no one gets suspicious if you meet somebody in the lunch line and start talking to them there.
Oh, I love it. You know, leave it to Google to research something like that.
Right.
I'm just like, oh, my God, really? Seriously? You know, there's an interesting question. What has been the reaction to your book, your research, your ideas? I think there's been some really interesting reactions here, right?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I've written about this a lot and been interviewed, and the typical reaction is, sadly, that women are getting what they deserve, that women who have advocated for stronger sexual harassment policies shouldn't be surprised when men are reluctant to ask them to lunch or dinner. So they say, like, women can't have it both ways. They can't tell men to be cautious around them and then complain when they feel left out because men are behaving too cautiously. But, you know, I don't agree with that. I think we can have it both ways, that we can maintain appropriate boundaries at work and still have developed friendships and mentor relationships with the opposite sex. But yes, it's been hostile, like they're getting what they deserve kind of reaction.
Yeah, I just, whoa. I mean, were you expecting that?
No, to be honest. Men can typically relate to my work. And so when I talk to people, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I do feel that way at work. And, you know, I am concerned that my actions will be misinterpreted as harassment, and I am cautious around women. But it wasn't until I started writing about it that I got the flip side, that it's women's fault because they've pressed for stronger sexual harassment policy.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, I bet a lot of women out there on her podcast land are scratching their unified heads saying, huh, what? How am I supposed to deal with this? What do I do? I'm going to work tomorrow and I'm afraid to have that one-on-one for a lot of reasons. And I'm also beginning to feel there's some pushback from guys as it relates to women and back and forth. So again, you wrote this marvelous book. Throw out some rules of the road that could really help a woman as she's working through this, big time challenge today.
Yeah, there are several things that individuals can do. And so, for example, if a woman is seeking out a mentor and is concerned that the mentor might think that she's seeking him out in some kind of romantic way or something, I would recommend that the woman be very specific about why she wants this person to be her mentor. So then they'll be less likely to misinterpret her intention. So saying, for example, you have the biggest client list in the firm, and I was hoping you could advise me on expanding my own client list, is really specific and raises much less suspicion than a more general request like, hey, I was hoping you could be my mentor. So just be really specific about why you want this person to be your mentor. And then after you have somebody as your mentor, I would suggest you tell everyone about it. Explain that, you know, Joe is my mentor and we're going to be meeting regularly and he's going to be really helping me expand my client list. Then your coworkers don't get suspicious when you and Joe are meeting frequently or heading off to Starbucks together. Other things individuals can do is seek out female mentors as well. Sometimes the research shows that, you know, men tend to run our corporations and be more powerful. So often the relationships with men can get you higher places, but there are an awful lot of women in most organizations that you can seek out to be mentors as well. And my other recommendation is to have as many mentors as you possibly can. So don't just set your sights on one person and focus on them. Talk to as many people, different people as you can. And, you know, if some people shy away, that's fine. You'll find someone else to be your mentor.
Interesting. You know, one of the common threads in all of this, from what I'm listening to, is a transparency. Number one, so it's just open and it's also public and it's also precise. So you're saying I want to work with this one particular, individual because they have an expertise that I am absolutely, needing, to be able to enhance my own, business relationship. No question about that. So that's extremely important. That transparency and being public and open about it is also very important. You know, I think a lot of organizations, please correct me if I'm wrong, also deal in secrecy. There's a lot of, I don't want someone else to know that so-and-so is my mentor because I don't want them to steal them too. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another example of that is workplace romance. Most organizations, you know, pretend that they don't happen or discourage them. And then people go around, if they're having one, and about half of us have had a workplace romance, the research shows, and people go around and keep them secret because the workplace is discouraging them. And the problem with keeping workplace romance secret is it not only makes it harder for the organization to keep tabs to make sure there's no favoritism going on, but it encourages the other employees to try and kind of out their fellow coworkers who they think are dating. So, you know, it can increase suspicion of non-romantic friendships if you see two opposite sex colleagues at Starbucks or grabbing lunch together. It raises suspicion because you think, oh, you know, maybe they're having a romantic relationship. And so I couldn't agree more. I think if organizations encouraged employees to disclose their romantic relationships, it would decrease the suspicion and make interactions between men and women much easier.
Oh God, are you telling me 50% of people out there have had a work-related romantic relationship?
Yes, the research shows about half of all people have had one at some point in their life.
Wow. It kind of makes you kind of sit with it for a minute. Go, wow.
Right. It's incredibly common. And yet organizations don't even, we do all this sexual harassment training and no one's talking about that. They just kind of gloss over it. They discourage it. They pretend it doesn't happen. And no one's talking about how to deal with it within the organization.
Wow. I'm also thinking that when you're talking about transparency, and saying, you know, I want this individual to be my mentor and the rest of it. The workplace in so many environments is so competitive and is so acid that I don't know that it really encourages that level of transparency, that a lot of people keep those kinds of relationships close to their vest because they see that as an asset that truly is theirs in their mind, that I have the ear of this one very important person, and one day that will play out in a promotion. This will, you know, I will learn so much from this individual. I don't want to share this person with anyone else, etc. Am I just being evil here, or is this really happening?
No, I mean, I think that does happen, and that strategy works really well when, you know, it's a man that has the ear of the other man, but when it's the woman who has the ear of the man, and, you know, someone sees them meeting together, or someone sees them, you know, grabbing drinks after work, then rumors start to fly. And so in that situation, it's actually better for the woman, I would say, to disclose to her colleagues, yeah, you know, I have this person's ear. He's really helping me out with some things. And that's why, you know, I've been meeting with him a lot, just to get ahead of, you know, jump ahead of the rumors. And because, it, you know, if once the rumors start flying, then that person may be more reluctant to meet with her in the future.
Is there a difference? Does the research show that there's a difference whether or not someone is married or not? So if the woman is married, has a couple kids, with or without kids, doesn't really matter, right? And she picks a male mentor, is she considered safer, you know, for lack of a better term, within, you know? Yeah, go for
it. Yeah, anecdotally, there are people who are not partnered up that make up pretend partners, so that they seem like they are in a relationship, so you know their actions will be less likely to be misinterpreted. So, so yes, it does help in one way. So your actions are slightly less likely to be misinterpreted if you are married or in a relationship. But another problem comes in with the spouse. People have reported to me that their spouse gets jealous, and this is the Mike Pence thing, kind of, is that they can't have dinner or lunch or drinks with the opposite sex because their spouse doesn't approve. So in some ways it makes it easier, but in other ways it makes it more complicated.
Good heavens. I'm just taking notes here furiously going, oh my gosh, this is getting complicated. So, you know, and then if that mentor is married, right, then you've got maybe two married people, right? The female mm-hmm. at the workplace, the male at the workplace as the mentor. And now you've got potentially two spouses who aren't really thrilled with all of this. And yet at the same time, the two individuals at work may be doing very well together with regard to that. I wonder, you know, clearly that will play itself out, and it has in multiple, you know, arrangements throughout organizations. But I wonder, do other people at work, right, consider a colleague who is married to be less likely to get involved with that mentor than someone who is single?
Yes, I would say from the people that I've talked to, that I've interviewed, that they are less suspicious of people who are married. And certainly one thing that is recommended is if you are married, that you bring your spouse around to things as much as you can to show that, you know, you're happily married, you're not seeking any kind of other romantic relationships at work. And also somebody on the flip side, somebody who has dated a lot of colleagues, is seen with more suspicion. So even if you're seeking out somebody in a purely business way, if you have a history of dating a lot of colleagues, then your actions will be perceived in a different way than somebody who is happily married and brings their spouse to events and things like that.
All right. Now let's go with numbers, right? So classically, the mass majority of the time one spends in 24 hours is at work. Isn't that true?
That's true.
All right.
Waking hours, certainly.
So, yeah, your waking hours, right?
Yeah.
So if that's really true, then you're actually spending more time in the workplace with, you know, that mentor, say, for instance, than you do with your own spouse or partner or, you know, whomever, back and forth. So if that's true, is it more mathematically probable that you might get involved with someone else?
Well, that is why the percentage is so high, why half of us have gotten involved with someone at work. Not only do we spend so much time there every day, but typically the people you work with have some similar interest that you have. If you're a computer programmer, the people you work with are probably also computer programmers and have an interest in computers. So you have the shared interest, you have the spending a lot of time together, seeing them a lot during the day. So yeah, it's natural that those kind of things will happen. One thing I think that really complicates the situation, just when you were talking about spending a lot of time with people, is this term that we've come up with, your office spouse, your office wife, or your office husband.
That's right.
Somebody that you work really closely with and, you know, you get along with them really well. And so we assign this label that has all these romantic connotations on it, even though you're really just working well together. And I think that is, we have to get rid of that label because, first of all, real spouses don't like that you have an office spouse. But it also takes something that's purely business and throws this whole sexual romantic connotation on top of it.
Oh, Lord, I'm just, my head's spinning here. You know, you have said that you're, in reality, you think we as women can have it both ways, that men and women can maintain appropriate boundaries at work and develop professional friendships and mentor relationships. Are you just a little optimistic person?
Well,
I think we need to really start a dialogue
on this and talking about these things. And like Mike Pence's comments and the New York Times research and, you know, you talking about this issue, getting it out there and just having a dialogue about it, because most people haven't really thought about it. They, you know, may tend to stick with same-sex friends or, you know, colleagues, and not really realize how that might impact the career of other people. And so just talking about it, I think, is a big first step. And, you know, getting the organizations on board would be, you know, a big second step in really making change. But I think it's a necessary step. If women are really going to reach parity with men in the workplace, I think we need to figure this out.
Well, you know, there's another little nuance to this as well. And that other nuance, right, is, you know, how do you present yourself at work, right? I mean, what's your appearance look like? Are you someone who is dressing, as it were, professional to the degree that you fit into that environment? So at Google, it's a t-shirt and jeans. I get it, right? On Wall Street, mm-hmm. it's something else. But I also wonder about women who are, I don't know how to say this, a little over-sexualized in their dressing, a little bit, it's more, it's just something that might be problematic for men. That's why on Wall Street, I see a lot of those pinstripe suits and all the rest of it and back and forth, both for male and female. I don't know. I've read a lot about the fact that how you present yourself in general is extremely important in really messaging that you're there to be an excellent professional, do your duties appropriately, excel, you know, get promoted, do your thing, and that there's a sort of a package look to that. What do you think of that?
I couldn't agree more that how you present yourself, presenting yourself in a professional manner, sends the right message that, you know, you're here for business and nothing else. The dress thing is a little bit of a slippery slope. There's, you know, a lot of stuff recently about girls' high schools not allowing the girls to wear leggings because it's too much of a distraction for the boys. And that the dress thing gets complicated very quickly. But, you know, because women don't want to be seen as, you don't want to label women as a distraction. And it's a slippery slope. But putting yourself forward as professional as possible is absolutely a great strategy to send the message that you're all business.
Yeah, you know, when I'm mentoring young women, I always just say, you know, bag the suggestive looking appearance and just go professional. At the end of the day, it'll always pay off much better for you, and it'll keep your life a heck of a lot simpler. Good grief right. almighty, you know. I love it. You know, Kim, your book is fabulous. Your work is wonderful. I just can't begin to thank you. And I know on behalf of all of our listening audience at the HER show, we really, really, you know, thank you for your messaging this incredibly important problem and challenge for women out there. Many women aren't talking about it. It's just kind of, you know, swept under the carpet. So we dragged it out from underneath the carpet, and here we are. So everyone out there, run and get the book, Sex and the Office, Women, Men, and the Sex Partition That's Dividing the Workplace. And we've had the utter pleasure of having the author, Dr. Kim Elsesser, on the show to be able to share her wisdom, her research, and the findings that she's put into her book. So please run and get the book. And the website is Forbes.com, cites Kim Elsesser. So please go and check out her wonderful work. Kim, thank you so much for being on the HER podcast.
Thanks so much for having me and talking about this issue.
Awesome. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of HER. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please just take a moment and rate and review this wonderful episode we've just done, because I read these and your feedback is so valuable. Yeah, I read it too. So please, please, please rate and review. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.